You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today we talk about a topic which was quite a surprise to me. I never thought about it. And Annie, who's our guest today, she's part of a leadership program that I'm running. And through that, we stepped over this topic. And those topics are very close to my heart, but I never saw the connection of them. And so one is clinical research, especially running clinical trials. And the other one is climate change and how the overall pharmaceutical industry or the whole kind of research is having an impact on our CO2 footprint globally. And thanks to Annie, I got the link about it. But before we dive into this, Annie, maybe you can introduce yourself.
Hey, yeah, I'm Annie. I'm a first-year PhD student based at Imperial College, and I work at the Imperial College Clinical Trials Unit. I have a bit of a varied background. I came from doing a pharmacology undergraduate and then swapped to applied statistics, whereas I worked as a clinical trials statistician for a while or embarking on a PhD.
That is so cool. Yeah, and as you can see, I don't only have people here on the shows that are 35 years into their career, but also people that are very early in their career. And I really want to have a mix of all these kind of different people, because I think everybody has something to contribute. And so if you are early in your career, you can actually have a big impact as well. Yeah, age very often doesn't matter so much. There's other things, especially kind of passion, attitude, how you approach things that make a much, much bigger difference. So let's talk about clinical trials and climate. So where's the connection there?
Yeah, I think it's probably something we don't think about day to day. I think you think about climate change in terms of like very physical things you can see, like transport you take. But actually, when you break down a clinical trial, there's like lots of areas which are really increasing your carbon footprint. And obviously it's amazing. We've got loads of clinical trials ongoing. That's great. We want as much clinical research as possible, but we really do need to think about the impact of that on the environment.
Yeah. Do you have any numbers in terms of how big the impact is, let's say, compared to other areas?
So I guess in clinical trials itself, we're registering approximately 38,000 trials every year. Amazing. But the actual carbon footprint of these trials is between 80 and 2,000 tons of CO2, which is quite enormous. And obviously, yeah, we can't continue in this way, but we want to generate research. Yeah, I think there's a bit of a push to think about how we drop that and how we do it more considerately.
Mm. 80 to 200,000 tons of CO2. That's a That sounds like a really large number. How does it relate to kind of other areas that we are a little bit more familiar with?
Yes. Yeah. The global average per person per year is 4.7 grams of CO2 per person. So even the smallest end of the scale, that's equivalent to just 42 people's carbon emission.
So how does that's a big number. Let's put that into perspective.
Yeah. So if we're saying that the average carbon footprint of a tile ranges from 80,000 tons of CO2, it is the equivalent between 17 people to 425 people's CO2 emissions per year. We need to outweigh the benefit of that with how good the research output is going to be.
Yeah, I think this is also one of the reasons, I think, that the whole kind of healthcare pharma industry worldwide actually has quite a significant impact on CO2. If you look at it, I think it's even in the same space as kind of air travel. Yeah. And so just think about this. This is quite a lot. Yeah. And so we, as statisticians, design clinical trials on an ongoing basis. Now, what kind of factors mostly in clinical trials affect CO2 footprint?
Probably travel within a trial, which is having a massive impact. That might be travel that a participant's doing to and from a site. It's travel that we are doing to and from our offices. It's travel that our operational teams are going out to sites today. And also delivery of drug. And if that's passing to and from sites before it reaches the patients, so these are probably things we could tackle quite easily that probably have quite a big reduction in our carbon footprint.
Yeah, I think of course, if you have lots of face-to-face visits, then each face-to-face visit requires all the participants to travel to site. Yeah. And of course, yes, some people will take the bus to the hospital two streets down the road, but lots of people will travel quite a lot. And so I think if you just think about that and how many visits you have, that increases the thing quite a lot. The other thing that I've seen is all the clinical trial operational parts in it, monitoring sites, initiating sites, everything that kind of happens on a by patient or by site level increases drastically if you have more patients and if you have more sites.
And I think this is where this idea of decentralization or decentralized trials comes in, where it's worth thinking about trials maybe from a more patient-centric view because they can stay at home. But this also contributes to the greener view because if we conduct a visit online because you're only asking a participant questions, of course we can do that at home. We don't need to bring them in. So I think there are actually simple changes which can be implemented. It's maybe just not been at the forefront of our minds because it's not a very traditional technique.
So what are the typical kind of barriers that you see, for example, for most decentralized studies? So for me, a decentralized study is where much more things happen at home. Does it also mean that potentially there's more sites, so that the travel to each of these sites is less? Is that also considered decentralized?
Yeah, so I guess you can have kind of hybrid decentralization where we might come in for some study visits and some are conducted at home. I guess you need to think a bit more carefully about your patient population. Not everyone is very technology literate or doesn't have the same access to technology at home. So that's probably quite a big barrier. I think in terms of trial teams, we're conducting a survey on this at the moment, but I think people are probably worried about technology failing, how that's like an extra level of setup. We're used to just setting up an in-trial thing. But I think as we have a lot of technology now, we conduct a lot of meetings online, it's not out with our capabilities, but I think the comfort of what we usually do definitely can outweigh, yeah, pushing forward with, I wouldn't say innovative solutions, because I think we have them, but yeah, being more tech focused.
Yeah, I think there is lots of examples already out there of how people use technology to avoid people traveling to sites. And that will make things much easier. The other thing also, of course, just the simplicity of slide of clinical trials. I've seen lots of waves of initiatives within companies that asked for, let's simplify our clinical trials. And afterwards, we always have more complex ones. Because each and every clinical trial very often takes a lot of burden. Yeah, just the setting up one study, with all the governance and all the discussions and all the funding and having a team and all these kind of operational things, these one-time costs are pretty, pretty significant. Mm-hmm. Therefore, very often people on a kind of, when they have already these one-time costs, get as much out of the clinical trial as possible.
Definitely.
So I think one area where people actually need to focus on is decrease these one-off costs. Yeah, make it easier to start a clinical trial.
I know, and I guess we're maybe thinking about more of this as we're creating our funding packages or what we're asking for, because I know having documentation online is like a big thing. And if you can get a package bundle within one funding for that, then you're more likely to utilize it across all trials. And that's being more efficient. But I guess it's getting to that place of having the money to do so is sometimes the barrier as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So as statisticians, we can think about, okay, of course, smaller studies usually have these kind of benefits of, let's say, need less CO2 footprint, but less visits, for sure. The other areas that I think can have a big impact is all the shipments that we do.
Yeah.
What's your experience in that area?
I think I've worked mainly on vaccine trials, so it's people having to come in to receive the IMP. But from speaking to my colleagues, I've realized that kind of shipments of the medicinal product, whatever that be, maybe directly to a participant's home, is more common than I thought. And I think that is cutting out a middle partner in this. Maybe we do need to think about how we're doing this in terms of how much plastic and waste it generates. I know we had a conversation within our unit recently about that and what we're doing with excess that hasn't been used. Are we recycling that? Yeah. So for example, some vials that haven't been used can be come back and used for medical students for training. This is a good way of recycling products that couldn't go back into hospitals.
Yeah.
But I think this is something we need to consider about the waste we generate surrounding a trial.
Yeah, that comes from all kind of different test kits and lab kits. Yeah. And especially if things also need to be, you can't just put them in a box, but say there needs to be temperature controlled and these kind of things that make a big difference. Also local versus central labs make a big difference.
Yeah. And I think on the same vein, in decentralized trials, we're saying, okay, we'll send test kits to people if we want to, I don't know, collect a urine sample or a blood sample, which is great because they're not coming into a site. But then are we thinking about the trade-off there in terms of carbon footprint? Is it actually better to send out this kit, or can they visit a local general practice to have that done, which they can walk to potentially? So there's good solutions. Is it the appropriate solution?
Yeah. Another area I think is during the study, every time you create a protocol amendment, that not only creates a lot of work internally, just talk to your clinical project managers and your CRAs, how much they love it. Protocol updates. And I've seen studies that have, you've just signed the protocol, the first part, and you already are working on the update. Yeah. I think sometimes putting their quality really good and moving more slowly so that you overall can work fast and reduce the number of protocol amendments can be a huge thing.
Yeah. And I guess, I've worked in the COVID vaccine trial and that had many protocol amendments due to the pace of it. I do wonder if sometimes there is a benefit in slowing and considering what you're doing. And if there's similar trials, trying to make sure you're really learning from the one before.
Speaking about learning, I think there's various aspects you can learn about in order to improve the CO2 footprint of the clinical trials you're working on. So what would be your recommendations that people dive into?
I think within the MRC, there is a Greener Trials Working Group, and they've published a paper on this, comparing a couple of trials to look at their carbon footprints. And I don't know if they've generated any sort of calculators, but I guess it's going back, I won't say everyone has the time to do this, but examining your trial flows, and if you can, calculating a general carbon footprint of it and seeing which trials are done better. Obviously, smaller, less complex trials probably do well, but is there any processes within them that has worked particularly well? And then using that to go forward. I think obviously it differs by size and complexity, but there's definitely parts we can adopt.
Yeah. I think there's also looking to kind of the organization you're working already in. Mm-hmm. You say already have some initiative. For example, AstraZeneca, just by Googling about clinical trials, that kind of site directly came up, and they have some initiative to bring the CO2 footprint down to clinical trials. Yeah. So watch out, does your organization have something similar already going on? And I think another area is talk to the other people that you're working together with. Is that already on their radar? Do they know about it? Do they care about it? Mm-hmm. And look for the people that where you think, they probably would care. And then have a discussion about them. Okay, what are big drivers in our clinical trial? Can we do? And review all the different activities that you have. Can you streamline them? Can you adjust them? Can you change them? Can you eliminate them? Very often with saving CO2, there's always also a big financial impact. And I'm pretty sure there's also other benefits. If your patients don't need to travel, that will probably increase retention on the clinical trial, will probably increase recruitment into the clinical trial, these kind of different things. Have a look into this.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is way more interlinked than we think from a surface level. And it is, it does require a bit of a review. But I think by improving one thing or taking something away, it might, as you say, and boost your retention to a trial, which is what we're all looking for when it's so hard to recruit patients.
Yeah, it would be awesome if there would be some kind of clinical trial CO2 calculator. That you could get an estimate of, where are the biggest things we can do something about it? Yeah. I found that super helpful for myself at one point a couple of years ago. We looked into the CO2 footprint of my family, and we did that with a calculator. And at the time, I was working in an international job and was traveling across the Atlantic a couple of times per year. And it was really telling when we had all the things that we did in the house and all these kind of little things, and how that compared to me flying once over the Atlantic, what a perspective. And that had a lasting impression on how I plan travel. Whenever I'm in Europe, I always try to go by train. I try to avoid business travel altogether. you can't reduce this to zero probably, but really be aware about it and have it at top of your mind, I think is really important.
Yeah, I do think sometimes we need that shock factor of seeing the numbers. And maybe it would take comparing a handful of our trials just to see. Yeah. And then the change is like easier to think about changing because we've seen that impact.
Yeah. And there's huge variation in terms of CO2 footprint within the pharmaceutical industry. Yeah. I just know about two companies, and I don't want to name them, but they are both very large pharma companies, and one has about 10 times the CO2 footprint than the other. One is in Europe and one is in the US, or more US-centric, and so one other one is more European-centric. However, of course, there can be lots of factors that contribute to CO2 footprint, but a factor of 10 is really big. And that tells me, just this factor tells me, that there's a lot of opportunity of what we can do, you know?
Yeah.
And so clinical trials is definitely one. I think it would also be really cool if whenever we speak about clinical trials within governance meetings and so on, not only speak about, you know, the design, the cost, the timelines, things like this, but also have one part in there that would be about the CO2 footprint.
I know, I was just thinking about that myself. I'm sure people writing, I don't know, grant applications don't want to add to their plate. But I do think, I don't know, some sort of manifesto to how green you're being would be really helpful. That's a drive to create a greener trial if funding bodies are thinking about that as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure many people would be keen on that idea, but if it's something we really do need to change, then that's going to have an impact.
Yeah, I think that's for the public, publicly funded trials, I'm pretty sure there would be some interest.
Yeah.
For privately funded trials, yeah, so from the pharmaceutical industry, lots of pharma companies already have an initiative to decrease CO2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Connect with these initiatives and see how you can help in terms of that, what you can learn about it, and how you, as a quantitative scientist, as a statistician, how you can contribute here as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So learn, increase your awareness. In terms of learning, there's actually one thing that is pretty cool. Annie is currently conducting interviews with people who are interested on the topic, and especially in terms of how decentralizing can decrease the CO2 footprint. So if people are working on this topic or are really interested in this topic, what should they do?
Yeah, I would say, please let me know you're interested. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm sure you can also find me via the Imperial website. My name's Annie Wright with a double A. And yeah, I think please drop me a message and we can maybe have an informal chat first. And as I build up my PhD, I would love to, yeah, have a one-to-one interview where we can talk about this in a bit more detail.
Awesome. Very good. So you will, of course, find all these details in the show notes. Yeah. So just go to theeffectivestatistician.com and there you will also find Annie's contact. It would be awesome if there would be more initiatives within our field as well that help to increase the awareness, help to increase the understanding of what we can do about it, and to have an impact. We have so many kind of special interest groups of whatsoever on estimands and non-proportional hazards and HDA and all kind of different things. Why not have something on greener research?
Yeah, I know. I think there is one greener trials group, which is probably quite new, but I think if you're passionate, then you should be joining it as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. Thanks so much, Annie, for this great interview and for this great discussion about how we as an industry, how we as individuals can have an impact on climate by doing all our work differently, rethinking how we design clinical trials, and not just about sample sizes and things like that, but also look into the operational aspects of clinical trials, work more closely with your clinical operations people, with the CRAs, to understand how the data is actually generated. Always my kind of advice for statisticians, you need to know how data happens. Yeah, so just for that purpose, it's probably already very good to understand how that exactly works. And then you will understand, okay, here are maybe areas that are nice to have, but not fundamentally so important. And you can streamline the overall protocol, or you can adjust the protocol so that you, with not so much loss in terms of quality, you have a huge improvement in terms of CO2, and alongside that, probably some other savings as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it's been a very interesting discussion, and it's excited me again. And I hope that anyone who listens can have a little think about what they can do.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.